Chapter 20, Let's Talk Turkey by Willie Snow Etheridge. 20, The Palace of the Sultans and Their Harems. Ever since coming to Istanbul, now almost 6 weeks earlier, the roommate and I wanted to go through the Seraglio, the rambling old palace of 21 successive sultans. The life in it had seemed very real to us when we were reading Suleiman the Magnificent, and had grown even more so after hearing many tall tales on the spot, as it were. It was difficult to get into, though. The powers that be in Turkey had closed all of it except the museum with its porcelain exhibit and a few other rooms. Somebody must know somebody to be permitted to go through the quarters in which the sultans and their harems had actually lived. Happily, we knew someone, a United States Navy commander, Jack English, who knew somebody, the chief curator of the Seraglio. After much dickering, he secured permission to take a small party of American friends through the whole business, 900 rooms. We didn't actually go through all 900, only, as a roommate kept mourning, 899. We were dead, figuratively speaking, before we were finished. In fact, we were practically dead before we started. On arriving at the entrance to the Seraglio, we were ushered into the darkish, dusty, cluttered office of the curator, a wisp of a man who looked as if he might have just crawled out from under one of his ancient manuscripts. Somebody said he wanted to serve us coffee. As we entered, he held each of our hands limply and briefly, saying no word, for he did not speak English, and he did not know who among us, if any, spoke French or Turkish. When he waved to us a little, when he waved us to little fragile French chairs that lined the wall. Perched on the edges of them, we waited in absolute silence for some minutes for the coffee to appear. The little man cocked his head at us, and we cocked ours back. Finally, Io, who was one of the group, ventured a few words in French, and he ventured a few words back. But from the baffled look on Io's face, we gathered his French was difficult to understand. Again, there was dead silence. Then abruptly, he hopped up from behind his desk, found some sort of reed instrument, and sitting down again, began to play. Slowly and almost inaudibly, he seemed to be feeling his way. A little crying note here, a little crying note there. It was so eerie and absurd, I dared not glance at Freddie, who was also among us, or the roommate. I was sure I would come completely undone. At last he stopped. We applauded gently, and Io said a few words in French. He bowed and smiled, and then he put that little instrument back to his mouth and played another long, long piece. Or perhaps it was the same long, long piece over again. There were the same little crying notes. The reason for this performance is still a mystery. Perhaps the instrument belonged to some famous sultan, or perhaps the music was written by some Turkish noble of note. But whatever the reason, we agreed later that we felt we had departed the world of everyday for a world of fantasy. The coffee finally served and drunk down, we shuffled to our feet, murmured a few words of thanks, and went out, blinking into the bright light of early afternoon. Except for Jack English, who had been studying the history of the Seraglio for many months, we were completely on our own. All of the Seraglio is interesting, but the vast section that was occupied by the women fascinated us most. As you know, of course, the sultan's wives and girlfriends and the innumerable women who served them were never allowed in the men's quarters. Only the sultans and eunuchs were allowed in the harems. But as you may not know, and I certainly didn't, until that afternoon, these women were legion. At one time, said Jack English, there were 2,200 women in the Sultan's harem. That ought to have been enough women, Freddie commented dryly. Many of them, though, had never had any contact with the Sultan. The vast majority were keepers of the house, keepers of the storeroom, keepers of the linen, keepers of the jewels, and I suppose keepers of the keepers. And sewing women, cooks, hairdressers, nurses, masseuses, maids. There's a thick volume entitled The Harem, devoted to these women and the sultans. It's hard to come by, but Commander English had it with him on a tour, and now and then he would halt us in some intricately carved marble bathroom or brocade hung salon and read or relate some passage from it. Frequently, at some lurid bit of information, his florid face would glow like the remnants of a red damask curtains above the Sultan's bed. And heaven knows what mine glowed like. As I'm fond of saying, I came clean from Georgia, and I can't get accustomed to listening, especially in mixed company, to bawdy goings-on. The bedrooms of the women, even of the wives and favorite concubines, are tiny cubicles, no bigger than jail cells, and usually under slanting roofs. For an hour or so, we poked our heads into them, expecting to find we knew not what, but seeing only layers of dust and a few pieces of fine French upholstered furniture with the brocade in tatters and the stuffing falling to the floor. The living quarters of the Sultans were much more spacious and elegant. Indeed, they covered acres, each Sultan adding on wings according to his inclination and taste. Among these Sultans was the son of Roxolana and Suleiman the Magnificent, with the intriguing name of Selim the Sot, and another was Ibrahim, who, to put it charitably, was crazy. And he had reasons to be. He had spent practically his whole life locked up, waiting for deaf mutes to come with their bowstring and strangle him. For some reason, they never came. So at the death of the Sultan who had had him incarcerated, Ibrahim ascended to the throne. We saw his bedroom, which he had hung with beautiful mirrors from ceiling to floor. He had these mirrors to stimulate his sexual power, Jack English remarked. Ibrahim was also mad about perfumes, Jack went on. Particularly ambergris and about sables. And when he wasn't wallowing in perfumes, furs, and women, he was adorning himself with jewels. He even wore emeralds in his beard. This I would have liked to have seen, but according to Jack, the Turks didn't care for it. There was considerable restlessness at the time, and hundreds of people in and outside of the seraglio were murdered. Those strangled inside the seraglio were tossed steadily at night into the Sea of Marmara. 'Tis said, so Jack recounted, that a diver swimming underwater near the seraglio once came upon throngs of dead women standing beside him. They were the late inmates of the harem who had been done away with secretly. After being murdered, they were sewn into bags, weighted at the foot, and dropped into the sea. Naturally, the stones held their feet to the bottom while the bodies swayed upward. I myself often saw innumerable black birds known as lost souls of drowned harem women skimming the surface of the Bosphorus. Ibrahim was not the only member of the House of Ottoman who spent long years locked up. It was an old Turkish custom for the ruling Sultan to lock up all his brothers and close cousins and frequently even his sons who might plot to overthrow him. We saw the cage in which they had been imprisoned. It contains 12 apartments and was once furnished in the greatest luxury, but nevertheless it was a cage of terror. Those kept there were allowed to hear no news, to read no papers, to see no visitors. Even the eunuchs who had attended them were deaf mutes. The prisoners spent their days and nights straining for a footstep of those coming to strangle them. When, by some turn of fate, one was let out to rule, he was not much better than a gibbering idiot. Suleiman, too, was confined in the cage for 37 years before he emerged to rule for 3. Another was confined 50 years, and another more than 40. I'm not sure whether Ahmed III in the 18th century was an ex-cage mate, but he certainly had cage eccentricities. His reign is called L'Allée d'Ivry, or Turnip Times, Jack related. He planted thousands of tulip bulbs, and when they bloomed, he pleasured himself in the evenings watching hundreds of tortoises, which, with lighted candles stuck on their backs, crawling among the flowers and tall, lovely maidens, gowned all in white, tossing golden balls to one another. Jack told us more, and we saw more, but for the last hour, we moved in a stupor. Like the Turks in the 1920s, we had our full of sultans and their women. End of chapter 20.